Today's shiur is Masechta Yevamos, Daf Tzadik Aleph. We will begin on Daf Tzadik Amud Beis, the bottom line. We continue discussing a woman who received a report through one aid that her husband had died, and she therefore marries a second person. Beis Din gave her permission to marry a second man. And then the first husband comes back. What is her status? Says the Mishnah, Ha'is Bas Yisrael. If she was a Bas Yisrael, Nifsal Makuna, she becomes prohibited from marrying a Kohen. Pshita. As the Mer, it's obvious. As we've learned, a woman who has relations that are not permissible, which is what happened here, with her living with a second husband, as we learned through the last number of dafim, is considered a zayna. And a kohen is not allowed to marry a zayna. So why does our Mishnah need to tell us this? Answers the Gemara, bas levi min ha'mais itzruchalei. What a Mishnah really means to say is that if she's a bas levi, she becomes disqualified from eating maisa. Ask the Gemara, o bas levi min ha'maisa min mifsal bibznus, does a woman who's a Baslevi become prohibited from eating Meiser because she had an inappropriate relationship? For Tanya, the Brisa says, Levia shenishbis oishen nivela bilas nus, of Levia was captured and was possibly had an inappropriate relationship. Or she had an adulterous affair, still noisle Meiser vaycheles, she's still entitled to eating Meiser. So even though the woman in our Mishnah was not supposed to marry this second husband, that shouldn't disqualify her from eating Meiser. Amar Rav Sheshes, again, as we've been learning, Knossa. This is a penalty that we gave her because she should have been more careful in making sure that her husband was no longer alive. And because she didn't go to that bother of checking and did marry the second husband, when actually the first husband was still alive, that's why we penalize her, that she's no longer entitled to Meiser. Tosfos discusses, if we recall, on Daf Pei Hei, we had a Machloikas for Mei and Rabbanon, what is the status of Meiser for Zorim? Is a Yisrael allowed to eat Meiser? Ramei said that only a Kohen or a Levi and their families may eat Meiser. Chum held even Yisrael may eat Meiser. Zor may eat Meiser. And Tosfos discusses when our Gemara is saying that this woman is being penalized, that she's not allowed to eat Meiser, are we referring, according to the Shita of Rameya, given that Rameya in general is stricter about Meiser, he only allows non-Zorim to eat Meiser. Here too, he'll consider this Bas Levi like a Zor. But the Chachamim who are generally lenient about allowing Zorim to eat Meiser will continue allowing this woman to eat Meiser? Or could be that even according to the Chachamim, who are generally more lenient in whom they allow to eat Meiser, will be still stricter and not allow this woman to eat Meiser as a Knas? There's also a nice tiyuk in the Gemara that I saw from Chaim Kanievsky in the Derech Amuna. He says that the Rambam, interestingly, uses different terminology in describing the mitzvah of Truma and the mitzvah of Meiser. By Truma, he says, Truma is given to the Kohen. The Kohen's family is entitled to eat from the Truma. But the Truma is given to the Kohen. Meiser, he says, the Meiser doesn't strictly have to be given to a Levi. It could be even given to the members of a Levi's family. And the question is, from where does the Rambam draw that distinction? So he says, it's really our Braisa. Because the Braisa says, Levia oshenishbis oshenivala bilas nus noist nalo Meiser. So you see that Meiser is given directly to the Levia. She doesn't only receive it as a member of a family that received Meiser. We furthermore learned in the Mishnah, bas kohen min ha'truma. If she's a bas kohen, she becomes disqualified from needing truma. So the question, this is the way the Rishonim explained the Gemara, is obvious. If she was described as a zayna, as we said at the beginning of her shir, she's obviously disqualified from eating truma. Answers the Gemara, a feel of a truma derabbanan. What the Gemara means, Mishnah means to teach us is that we don't even allow her to eat truma derabbanan. There's a machloikas rishonim. This that she's not allowed to eat true midaraisa. Is that midaraisa, that she's considered a full-fledged zoyna, and midaraisa she's disqualified, or is it only midarabonim? Furthermore, the Mishnah said, then Yashu Shazev and Yashu Shazev, neither the children of the first husband or the children from the second husband, Yashin Ksubasa, are get her Ksuba. Ask the Gemara, Ksuba Mayavidita. Why is there a discussion of a Ksuba? As we have previously learned, the halacha is that this woman is not entitled to a Ksuba, not from a first husband and not from a second husband. So what's the discussion of her ears receiving the Ksuba? There's nothing to receive. Answers the Gemara, Amra Papa, Ksubis Benin Dichrin. Ksubis Benin Dichrin means as follows. Amra Masechta Ksubis discusses this at length. Chazal wanted to encourage fathers to give their daughters a decent dowry, which fathers were many times reluctant to do. Because what was the concern? The concern is that if a father gives his daughter, as she enters a marriage, a decent dowry, then what might happen is that the daughter may die before the husband, and the halach is that the husband inherits his wife. Then the husband will marry another woman, have children, and all of his children, even if he had children from the first wife, will equally inherit his possessions when he passes away. So what's happening here is that this person who's giving this dowry is saying to himself, it's very possible that people who aren't my children or my grandchildren are going to be getting my assets. So Chazal set up what's known as Ksubas Benin Dichrin. What Ksubas Benin Dichrin says is as follows. If a man marries a woman, the woman brings in assets to the marriage. If she dies before him, he inherits her. If he then goes and marries a second wife, and he dies before the second wife, certainly the wife is entitled to ksuba, which is always the halacha, that if a husband dies before his wife, his wife is entitled to the ksuba, and that's given off the top to that wife. But the rest of the assets that are left are not just divided amongst the sons. We take the assets that the first wife brought in, and they're given to her children. Like that will encourage and keep the first father-in-law interested in giving his son-in-law a decent dowry, because he knows that those assets will not leave his family. It'll either be by his son-in-law or by his real grandchildren. So ask the Gemara, Pshita, why should there be a question Ksus Benin Dichrin? Ksus Benin Dichrin is only where there's a Ksuba. Here there's no Ksuba. Answers the Gemara, Madatem Lido Davdi Yisur. As we've been explaining, the wife did something improper, not checking carefully enough that her first husband die. And therefore, Katsur Rabbanan, Chazal penalized her that because she didn't check properly, she should not be entitled to Ksuba. However, Lazara loy Katsur Rabbanan, her children didn't do anything wrong, so why should they be penalized? Kamash Malan. And why indeed are they penalized? So the Mefarshmik say, because since Ksuba Sman and Dichrin is Tanai Ksuba, and Daloch is the Tanai Ksuba Ksuba Dami, so whatever is Daloch and the Ksuba automatically becomes Daloch and the Ksuba Sman and Dichrin. Continue the Mishnah teaching us, Ochav Shazeh, Ochav Shazeh, Cholzim V'loi V'yabim. The two brothers both do Chalitza. Says the Gemara, Ochav Shalrishin, Cholz Medaraisa. As we've been saying, the first husband is really a full-fledged husband. So if he were to die without children, his wife, his brother, should do Yibam. So says the Gemara, Chayot Medaraisa, we require him to do Chalitza. V'loi Miyab Medrabonon. Even though she is a candidate for Yibam, Medrabonon, we don't allow her to have Yibam because of a Knas. Ochel Shosheni, the second husband, really should not have to do anything because the marriage wasn't a real marriage because she was an Eish Ish. Why do we require Chalitza? Chayot Medrabonon. There's certainly no obligation for Yibam. We make him do Chalitza simply by people who don't recognize and don't realize that this second marriage wasn't a valid marriage, may think that it was a valid marriage, and may think that the wife of a man who died without children doesn't have any Zika, doesn't have any Chalitza Yibam obligations. That's why we require her to have Chalitza even from the brother of the second husband. So there's two very interesting points that the Paiskim discuss on this Gemara. The Beis Meir says that given that the Gemara just taught us that the brother of the first husband has only an option in this case to do chalitza. We take away from him the ability or the right to do yibam. So it becomes what's known as a chalitza psula. If we recall what we learned earlier in the Masechta, a chalitza psula is a chalitza where chalitza was the only option, yibam wasn't an option. And we learned that there's certain mandarim that hold that when a chalitza psula is in place, then every brother has to do chalitza individually. Says the Beis Meir, given that we now have a situation of a chalitza psula, because yibam isn't an option, it's not just that one brother of the first husband will have to do chalitza. Let's say he had more than one brother, each brother will have to give her chalitza because they're chalitza psulas. That is another shaila that the Paiskim discuss. It's Mechloikis HaPaiskim. What is the halacha of the brother of the second man? Is he allowed to marry this woman or not? Ostensibly, he should be allowed to. His brother was never really a husband of hers. He was never really a brother-in-law. So many Paiskim say, if he wants to marry her, he may marry her. Others say, just like Chazal made Gzeira, that the brother of the first husband, as we just described, only has the option of doing chalitza, not yibum, so too does the brother of the second husband, even though it really wasn't a marriage, have the only right to do chalitza, not yibum. Continues the Mishnah. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Subasa al Nechsei Ba'ala Arishim. So if we review what we learned in the Mishnah, we will find that till now we've been analyzing and describing what the Tanakhama holds. After the Mishnah quotes the Tanakhama, the Mishnah quotes three more opinions. It quotes the opinion of Yossi, who says Ksubas al Nechsei Ba'ala Arishim. He disagrees with Tanakhama. He says that the first husband does have to pay her Ksuba. Rav Eleza says, Harishin Zakeh b'mitziyasa masyidel, he is entitled to getting what she finds and what she works. Rav Shimon Omer, b'yasa chalitzas me'achav shalrishin, unlike what we just learned, that the brothers of the first husband may do yibam and the child will not be a mamzer. So we have three lenient opinions. What the Gemara is going to focus now on, actually machloek samaroim, is how do we view these three opinions? Do we view them as each being more lenient than the previous one? Or do we really view it the other way around? That the first one is the most lenient, the second one is a little less lenient, and the third one is even less lenient. So that's the machlokes of the Gemara. Amar afuna basroi moidel kamoi. The later opinions agree to the earlier opinions. Kamoi le moidel basroi. So what it means is that every opinion cited in the Mishnah is even more lenient. They certainly agree to the previous leniency, but they even go even more. Rav Shimon moidel le Rav Elazar. The Gemara explains itself. Rav Shimon agrees with Rav Elazar. The ma'biya. What does Rav Shimon say? That the brother of the first husband is allowed to do yibam. That refers to having an act of relations, where all of what we're concerned about here is such act permitted or not. So here, if relations are permitted, deki sura loikonis, that we're not prohibiting. Koshke mitziyasa masyadah. Certainly when it comes just to what she earns, the reminder who, we certainly will not fine her. Rav Elazar le'maydele Rav Shimon. Rav Elazar, on the other hand, doesn't agree to Rav Shimon. Mitzi osa masya deha, which is only a situation of mumen who, that's where loikonis, we don't find. Avel bia, when it comes to not allowing relations, with the surihu, which speaks to the actual basic fundamental issue here, they're konis. The tavayu, both Rav Elazar Rav Shimon, will certainly, according to Rav Huna, Maidele Rav Yossi agree to Rav Yossi. Because I'll say, Hani de Yosvi Tasei. These situations speak about having a relationship. Marrying the Yavam, Metziyasa Masyidea. Still like Konis, Koshken Ksuba. When is a Ksuba paid? The Ksuba is paid when the marriage is terminated. What are we anxious to see here? We're anxious to see this marriage terminate. The Lemishka Umepikoi certainly will give it to him. However, Rav Yossi has this opinion that she is entitled to Ksuba because it really accomplishes our goal, but he won't agree to Rav Elazar of Shimon's leniencies because he's going to say, Ksuba de la Mishkel Umepiku, only the Ksuba which is given with the purpose of terminating the marriage, that's where the Lekonis. Avahani, these other issues which affect the Yosvit to say, that affect continuing the marriage, that Chazal Konis penalized and will not agree to that leniency. That's Rav Huna's understanding of our Mishnah. Rav Yochanan has just the opposite understanding of the Mishnah. Rav Yochanan makamoi moidel basroi, the earlier opinions in the Mishnah agree to the later leniencies. However, basroi lemoidel kamoi, the later leniencies don't agree to the earlier leniencies. And again, the Gemara explains Rav Yochanan's opinion. Rav Yosi moidel Rav Elazar. Rav Yosi agrees to Rav Elazar because he says ksuba. When it comes that Rav Yosi says that she is entitled to the ksuba, who pays the ksuba? The husband gives the wife the ksuba. Ksuba demididei lido. Loikonis. Koshkein mitziyosa masi yidea demidido lididei, which she has to give to him. Certainly, he's deserving to get. She's the one that did the wrong thing. Let's remember that. She's the one that married the second husband without doing correct or enough investigation. If such a circumstance, so she's the one that should be penalized. So we're saying that the husband gives her the ksuba, certainly she should be paying the husband. In fact, Tosfos says, we need to understand why anybody would suggest that she shouldn't. If we're trying to penalize her, isn't it telling her that you're going to have to give mitziyasa masi there to your husband a penalty? So why is Reb Elazar taking that away? So Tosfos says, a gevalda gesvara. Tosfos says as follows, if a wife is earning a nice salary, masi yidel. A wife finds something expensive in the street, mitziyosa, and doesn't give it to her husband. What's that going to cause between the wife and the husband? Animosity, which will break the marriage. Says Reb Elazar, don't give mitziyosa, so we should have the animosity. Reb Elazar, loy moidele, mitziyosa, masi yidel, the mididol of the day that she gives him, loy konis, avak suba, the midaylu dida that he gives her, that's where Chazal penalized her and deprived her of it. The tavai modeler of Shimon, and they both agree with Shimon. Ma hani de mechayim lekansi, if these things which take place while the husband's still alive, paying the ksuba if they get divorced, her giving mitziyasa masiyadel, still they didn't penalize bia, which the question of her being a candidate for Yibam, which is only relevant, Lachamisa, we know that there's no Yibam before the husband dies, like Koshkein. And therefore, explains Rav Yochanan, Rav Shimon like Maidalu, Rav Shimon will not agree with the leniencies that Rav Elazar and Rav Yosi espoused. Because he's going to say, when am I lenient? I'm only lenient regarding Bia, because that's Lachamisa. So then there's no reason for penalties. There's no worry that their marriage is going to continue. The husband died. And that's why, like Konis, there's no need for penalties. Aval Hani, the other leniencies, which are in effect when the husband is alive, the Mechayim, there, since our goal is to break this relationship, Konis we penalized. So the Mishnah continued teaching us that a woman, there could be two circumstances under which a woman receives a report that her husband died and gets married to a second husband. We could have a situation where it was one aid, one witness said that the husband died, and that's called nisus b'rishus bezdin, because she needs a special heter from bezdin, because normally one aid is insufficient. So to allow her to get married based just on the testimony of one aid, she needs a special heter. And then we could have a situation where two aidim came. There, we don't really need a special heter from Bezdin, because that's the case that the Torah always talks about. Apishnei Edom Yakum Dover, when two witnesses say it. That's called the Mishnah's Mishnah Shloi Brishos. Says the Gemara, Amrav Huna Marav, Hachi Hilchasa. The halacha is, as Rav Shimon says in our Mishnah, that Nisus Shloi Brishos, if she got married where she didn't need a special heter from Bezdin, that because there were two Edom, there, the halacha is muteris lachsalai. She may go back to the first husband. And that says, Rav Huna Marav, hachi hilchasa, that's the halacha. Amalei, Rav Nachman, so Rav Nachman says to Rav Huna, genuvi genuvi lamalach. Why do you say it in this surreptitious way? Obviously, you're agreeing with Rav Shimon. Isvir lach Rav Shimon. If you agree with Rav Shimon, eima halach Rav Shimon. So say it, that you agree with Rav Shimon. The shmatzach, what you're saying is consistent with Rav Shimon's opinion. So Rav Huna will say, you know why I didn't say it that way? Because were I to explicitly say that the halacha is like Rav Shimon, mashma afilu kamaisa, one can erroneously think that I agree with Rav Shimon also in the previous opinion that he said in the Mishnah that we just discussed. That Rav Shimon said that the brother of the first husband does do yibum with her, and that opinion I don't agree with. So there's a way of avoiding that problem, says the Gemara. Eima, look, Rav Shimon b'achrayna. Say that I agree with Rav Shimon, but only in his second opinion that he mentions in the Mishnah, not in his first opinion. But say who you hold like. Kasha. Says the Gemara, it's indeed a kasha. Amar Sheshes. Amina, kenayim v'shoch of Rav amala shmatza. Sheshes makes a very sharp statement. He says, Rav said this when he was sleeping. And in fact, there's a tshuva from the Chavos Yar that discusses how could Rav Sheshes speak in such a derogatory fashion about Rav. So he says, it's not derogatory, it's actually a compliment. Rav Sheshes was obviously disagreeing with what Rav said. He says, Rav is such a great Talmud Chacham, he would never make a mistake like this. It must be when he was sleeping. When he's sleeping, you don't know what you're saying. But if he were awake and cognizant of what he was saying, he would never say something wrong. So it turns out to be a compliment. And moreover, the Chavos Yar says they're very interesting. He says the Gemara sometimes uses the words Nayim v'Shochiv, and sometimes the Gemara uses the words Shochiv v'Nayim. What's the difference? He says it's a Tosfos. Tosfos says Nayim v'Shochiv refers to the first part of the night when one goes to sleep. Shochiv v'Nayim refers already towards the morning when you're waking up, you're just a little groggy. He wanted to show how convinced he was. The Rav was just not aware of what he was saying. He said at Nayim v'Shochiv, when he was in the deep sleep at the beginning of the night, and he was sleeping well, and that's why he said something like this. Were he completely conscious and aware of what he was saying, he would have never said something like this. Why? Because what's Rav saying? Halacha. So Rav is indicating that we have here a machloikus. We actually have here a machloikus. What is the din if there were two Edom that said that the husband died? And Rav Shimon would say that she's allowed to go back to the first husband. The Rabbanan would disagree. And Rav saying that halacha is like Rav Shimon. That's what the halacha seems to mean. Halacha mechlal de pligi. Says the Gemara, nobody's disagreeing. Because my havel elavit. Men answer. Why do we have a reason not to allow her to go back to her first husband? Two kosher witnesses came and told her that her husband's dead. So it's not that there's a machloikas here, says Rav Sheshes, and that Rav says there's a machloikas and I'm going to agree with Rav Shimon. There's no way there should be a machloikas here. That's one point Rav Sheshes makes. Then Rav Sheshes makes another point. Voi Tanya, there's a braisa. The braisa says the following. Kol ha-raish v'tayra, if people who are prohibited to have relations with each other, the ervis, do get married, the marriage is meaningless. En tzrich men get. Chutz me'eshes ish and nishas al-pi bezdin. Except the situation of an eshes ish that got married because of bezdin. What does this price say? This price is differentiating and saying, al-pi bezdin, who the boy get? Where she needed a heter bezdin, which is another way of saying that there was only one aid, that's where a get is required if she marries the second husband. Al-pi adam, but if there were two witnesses, like by a get, she doesn't need a get from the second husband, could go right back to the first husband. Now, who is the author of this braisa? Elaim Rav Shimon, if you're going to say it's Rav Shimon, al pi bezdin mi boy get, does Rav Shimon hold that when there was only one aid, a get is required? V'tanya Rav Shimon Oimer, Rav Shimon says, also bezdin boy rosan, bezdin treats the situation where a woman married a second husband because of a heter of bezdin, again, because there was only one aid, k'zodin ish pi isha. Like a husband and wife had intentional relations. Alpi Adim, but when there were two Adim, Kishigas Ish B'Isha. And in both cases, where a man and a woman had an adulterous relationship, makes no difference if it was B'Mezid, makes no difference if it was B'Shoigig, if the woman's an Ashes Ish, and she has an adulterous relationship, Loi Ba'Yiget. So what do we see from this second Braisa? What we see from the second Braisa, let's think this through together, that Rav Shimon never requires a get. Whether it was only one aid, or whether it was two aidim, if she marries a second husband, he never requires a get. So if we're going to find a braisa, which we didn't find, we actually learned already, that says that there is a difference if there's only one aid saying that the husband died versus if there are two aidim saying the husband died. And that the Braisa says if there's one aid, a get is required. But if there are two aidim, a get is not required. Whose opinion must that reflect? Can't be reflecting Rav Shimon. Because Rav Shimon says a get is never required. Whose opinion must it be reflecting? It's reflecting the opinion of the Rabbanim. So Rav Sheshes is asking even a stronger question. You're saying the Rav, Hunam Rav, says the Halacha of Rav Shimon. It's not Rav Shimon's opinion. It's the Rabbanim's opinion. Because they're the ones that differentiate between one aid and two aidim. Says the Gemara. What forced you to say this Pshat and Rav Shimon, this price that we just quoted? Says the Gemara, Loyal and Rav Shimon he. The second, we could still argue and say it's only Rav Shimon that requires a get by one aid and not by two aidim. The Rabbanim will always require a get. I, this price that we just learned, that seems not to differentiate between one aidim and two aidim, Tritzachi. The way to understand the Braisa is discussing a different subject altogether. Rav Shimon Omer, also Bezdin by Rosson, Kikavonis Ish, the Isha Ubayi Get. If Bezdin allowed her to marry a second man because there was only one aid, then it's like a man and woman who had intent to get married when they had a relation with each other, that their regret is required. I'll be Adam, but if she got married to the second husband based on the testimony of two witnesses, that's considered like a situation, like the man and woman who had relations with each other did not intend to marry, they just intended to have relations, so actually we don't have any longer a braisa that has Rav Shimon always saying the same, and Rav Shimon always requiring a get. Rav Ashi says another way of explaining this braisa that we were using to prove Rav Shimon always requires a get. Linyan Suruk Tani. The braisa should be understood regarding Isser, Vachkam. Also buzzed by Rosson, Kuzodin Ish B'Isha, or Mitzra Abala. If a man and a woman, if an Eishes Ish has relations, willingly, she's always asked to go back to her husband. Says the braisa. Similarly, if she got married to a second husband based on the testimony of only one aid, Mitzra Abala. She can't go back to her first husband. Al pi Adam, but if she got married based on the testimony of two witnesses, it's like the situation of Shigigash Ish B'Isha, where Eishes Ish was raped, and as long as the husband's not a Kayin, V'loy Mitzra Abala, she's allowed to go back to her husband. But it has nothing to do with a get. It could very well be that Shimon will agree that by one aid a get is required, and by two aid a get is not required. Ravina has another way of explaining this braisa. Ravina Malinya Karbon Ketani. The braisa is talking regarding carbon. And the braisa is saying as follows. Also Bezdin by Rosson, Kizodin Ish B'Isha, V'loy Masi Karbon. We know that a carbon chatos is never brought when a person doesn't have Aver B'Shogeg. Says the braisa that if the woman got married based on one aid, it'll have the same halacha as if a woman deliberately had an adulterous relationship, and in both cases there's no requirement for carbon. However, the question that you're thinking of, Taisa says this is only a simon. The Gemara is connecting two situations, even though the situations are dramatically different. In one situation, the woman doesn't bring a carbon because she didn't aver deliberately, so we don't allow her to bring a carbon. In the other situation, she didn't do anything purposely wrong. She relied on the one aid. So even though the reasoning is so very dramatically different, here she's a deliberate averus avera. Here she made an honest mistake. The end result is very much the same, that the halacha is that she doesn't bring a carbon in either situation. However, but let's say she got married based on testimony of two witnesses, and then her first husband does show up. It's similar to a situation of Shigigash Ish B'Isha, where a woman had relations with a man B'Shagig, or Masi Karbon. Ask the Rishonim a very obvious question. Why is the halacha that if a woman got married to a second husband based on two witnesses that were saying is very strong, Apishnei Edom Yachmim Dover, and then the first husband comes back, why does she have to bring a carbon? What did she do wrong? So Rishonim say, this concept, a very important yesod that the Rishonim say, this concept that a woman should always check independently did our husband indeed die is always in place in halacha. Certainly if there's only one eight, as we've been learning in the whole parak, but even in a case, the chiddush, that even in a case where two eidim told her husband died, and she relied on it without doing any independent verification, and then the first husband does come, we can't call her totally innocent, call her an oinus, and absolve her completely, and she will have to bring a carbon. Now the Gemara goes with a different track. We learned, we quoted the first braisa, which started on the first wide line in Amun Aleph, that the braisa says that when she got married based on one aid, a get is required. When she got married based on two aidim, a get is not required. And we're suggesting that that could only reflect the opinion of Rabbanan. Says the Gemara, Ibai say mahakamais Rabbanan. Yes, this braisa is the Rabbanan, but we misunderstood how to understand the braisa. The tritz hochi, we have to add one letter to the braisa. Chutz mi eishes ish, the shenissus abei bezdin, that in both cases, a get is required. So the braisa isn't saying that we're going to distinguish between if there was one aid where a get is required and there were two aidim, a get is not required. Just the opposite. This braisa is saying that a get is always required. Whose opinion does that reflect? That reflects the opinion of Rabbanan. So now if we go back to the beginning of this piece of Gemara, when Rav Huna Amram said that two aidim, a get is not required, it can't reflect the opinion of the Rabbanan. Because the way we're now understanding the braisa that mentions the position of the Rabbanan say that even by two eidim, a get is required. And Tosfos takes it even a step further. Tosfos says the Rabbanan will hold that if a woman got married, even though she got married on the based on the testimony of two eidim, two things will be. Number one, a get will be required. And number two, she can't go back to her first husband. So when Rav Huna Amram said that when there are two eidim, she doesn't require a get, and she can go back to the first husband, it only reflects the opinion of Rav Shimon, not the Rabbanan. Now we go a step further. Rav Sheshis, in disagreeing with Rav Huna, that Rav Huna said that the opinion that allows a woman to go back to her first husband and not require a get if there were two witnesses reflects the opinion of Rav Shimon, Rav Sheshis disagreed with Rav Huna for two reasons. One reason was because he said there's a braisa that this says that the Rabbanan don't hold that way. So we just re-explained to the braisa that the braisa doesn't say that. And the Rabbanan indeed hold the get as required. But there was another basis to Rav Sheshis' disagreement with Rav Huna. Rav Sheshis said he can't understand how one could even think that a get would be required. Why one could think she shouldn't go back to her husband. Me'enes me'onso. She's an innocent victim. My havelol amevid. What should she have done? Two witnesses came and said her husband is dead. Proves the Gemara that concept doesn't always work in halakha. And we're going to have a number of situations where the Gemara attempts to prove it from. The Gemara says, Vatnan, there's a mishnah masech to gittin. Kosel l'shei malchus she'en agenes. If a get was written to, and they used to write the date to the year of the king, and they wrote it to the year of the Roman Empire. Why is the Roman Empire considered a Malchus She'en Hagenes? Because the Gemara says that Rome is a very low-level country. En lahem ksav v'loy loshen. They don't have their own script, and they don't have their own language. So that was used as the date of a get. L'shem Malchus Modai, l'shem Malchus Yovin. If they used Modai or Yovin's years for the get, and as Tosfos explains, even though the Gemara says, normally, interesting Tosfos. Tosfos says that the Gemara Masechet Avodah says, Avodah Zarah says that normally when they did date documents, they used the date of the Greek kingdom. By a get, such a potent document, it terminates a marriage. The local government was very insistent that they used the local king's date, no one else's. And therefore, if they use the dates of Modei V'Yovin, it will disqualify the get. Lebinyan Abayis, Lechurban Abayis, Hoye B'Mizrach, the Kosa B'Marv, if he was on the east side, and he wrote that the get is being written on the west side, But Mariv, if he was on the west side, the cusp of Mizrach, the get is disqualified. Teitzim Mizeh Mizeh, if she got married to a second husband based on this disqualified get, she has to leave him, but she can't go back to the first husband. The Kala Drachma Eilba, and all of the dinim that we learned in our Mishnah, that we've been discussing the last couple of days, apply. Ask the Gemara if there's a concept there of Sheishas is espousing. Of my Havalela Mevid, for my, Lema my Havalela Mevid. Why are we being so severe on this woman? She didn't write the disqualify get. Answers the Gemara, she isn't innocent. She should have read the get before she relied on it. And therefore she's not considered honest and she's not innocent. Mefarshim man discussed a number of points here. Here we speak about if the wrong date is written. What will be that, what does that mean? And if they wrote a date to a wrong kingdom, does that mean that the halacha is that you have to write a date, but you have to write the right date? Or does it mean it's you don't have to write a date? But if you're going to write a date, you have to write the date properly. Actually, it's very nogel halacha lemaisa. Because when we write gittin nowadays, we don't write gittin to the year of President Bush. We write Gittin Tov Shin Samach Zayin. So how do we look at it? So the two opinions that I just cited say as follows. The opinion that says that all the Gemara means is that if you write the get, the date, write it properly. So we're not writing any kingdom, so it's no problem. The opinion that holds that you have to write a date, holds that, and you have to write it to the local kingdom, only holds it in places where that was a factor. When documents were generally written that way. Nowadays, the documents are not written. No, any documents, secular documents, aren't written that way. So that halacha changes. The Braisa also spoke about b'mizrach u'b'mariv, that the get was written b'mizrach and it was really b'mariv or vice versa. The question is, who are we referring to? Some say it's referring to the cipher, that the cipher is writing the get and he writes in the get that I'm on the east side when he was really on the west side. Most Rishonim disagree. He says because where the cipher is not material to the get. What's material to the get is where the Edom are. So if the get wrote that the Edom were Mimizrach and they're really B'mariv, or vice versa, that disqualifies the get. Furthermore, the Paiskim discuss, we know that Halach is a get Me'ucher is kosher. That means let's say somebody wants to divorce his wife. If he doesn't want to get for today's date, he wants to get for 30 days from now. If we're going to have to write in the get, the place where the Edom are, so we're going to write a get mu'ukhar, we have to make sure to know where they're going to be in 30 days. Otherwise the get would be puzzled, because if the get doesn't have the accurate location where the Edom are when the get is to be effective, we just learned that the get becomes disqualified. Furthermore, says the Gemara, Amar Rav Shema, Simi Bar Ashi, again to talk about this concept of my Havalei Lemevet. Hakanes Yisivimta, somebody married, a brother died, case that we've been discussing so many times. Reuven died and he had two wives. His brother Shimon took one of the wives as Yivama. V'hochot Sarasa v'nissus. So the other wife is now exempt and she marries another man. V'nimtzuzu Eilonis. And it turns out that the wife that had Yibum was an Eilonis. The Aloch is, so there's no Yibum in Eilonis. And the Tzara had no right to marry a second husband. And therefore, Teitzim Zem Zem. She can't remain married to the second husband, nor can she go to the Yibum, to the Yavam, the Kolad Rachim Eilba. Again, ask the Gemara, for my name and my Havalei Lemevet, what do you want from this woman? She should know that her co-wife was a Eilness? Says the Gemara, yes, Ibailam Tuni. She shouldn't have gotten married to a second man until she knows for sure that her co-wife is not an Eilness. So ask the Mefarshim, so you could say the same in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah of Shesh is saying that if there are two witnesses, we don't have to wait. Why don't you say the same thing? She should have waited to see if her first husband is going to come. So the Rishonim give two answers. To see and wait till if her first husband comes, that could be forever. To see if a woman is eilness, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, at a certain point we're going to be able to identify. So it's not something that's going to be forever. Another teretz the Rishonim give. Oh, this woman that two witnesses said that her husband died, no longer is an Eishes Ish. That's the power of Pishnei Edom Yochum Dover. This woman has a Cheskas Yivama, and that Chazaka cannot be broken unless it's certain that it should be broken. The Rishonim also point out that we're going to have I think it's six. We'll count as we learn together. Kashus that the Gemara asks, might have a little mevid. The Gemara says, yes, she had an option. The Gemara, the Rishonim, we don't have time to explain it by every one of these kashus, say every time it's more of a chiddush than the previous case. Reading a get, anybody could read a get. So the Gemara says she should have read the get. This case, to think that her co-wife was an islandess, most women are not islandess. Who says she should have to even think about that? Kamashmon, yes. Iboilam tune. Next situation. Omer bai toshma. Kolarash omer poitus to her same. We go back to the first Mishnah of Amasechta. The Mishnah says that if two women are married to a husband and one wife is an erva to the Yavam, she disqualifies that the Hatzara is also not required to have Yivam. Hochutzaras v'nissu. V'nimtzu eilenu eilenis. Teitzman zem zev kol drach me'elba. If it turns out that the wife was an eilenis, and since she was an eilenis, she was really never married to the husband, as we learned in the first blot of Amasechta. So she wasn't a tzaras erva, because the erva was an islandess. The aloch is, she had no right to marry the second husband, and therefore teitz mizu mizu. Again, asked the Gemara, name of my havelel mevet. Again, asked the Gemara, boilelam tunei, she shouldn't have been quick to marry the second husband until it was identified if a co-wife was or wasn't an islandess. Amar avatoshma. As we've been discussing, when a get is given, what happens is that the husband gives the wife a get, and he has to pay her for a ksuba. Typically, at the same time, a shaver is written. A shaver is a receipt that she's going to give him a receipt for the ksuba payment that she received. So what happened here was, because of Saifa Getlish, he wrote a get on behalf of the husband that he should give to the wife, the shaverish, and he wrote a receipt for the wife that she will give him when she gets her ksuba payment. The tor, and the Saifa got confused, the nosen Getlish of a shaverish. He gave the get document to the wife, and he gave the receipt document to the man. And then they each give each other the documents. And then they realize there was a terrible error here. The husband, who should have a receipt in his possession, has a get. So he never gave his wife a get. And she got married. And the wife who should be holding a get is actually holding a receipt. And she got married on the assumption that she had a get. The halacha is, she has to leave the second husband, cannot go back to the first husband, the kol adrach me'elba. Ask the Gemara, for my name of my havelel mevet, what do you want from her? And as Rishonim explained the Gemara, we're referring to, the Gemara before says that she's supposed to read the get. Here they read the get. The husband read the get and found the get perfect. They read the shaiva was perfect. So we think, here it's certainly an oinus. So the Gemara, Iboile Lekruel Gita. When somebody gives them a document, when the husband gave the wife the document, she shouldn't just take the document and put it in her pocket. She should have read, made sure that she got the right document. And if she didn't, it's not considered an oinus. Says the Gemara further. Amar Vashi, Toshma, Shina Shma Vishma. If they didn't write the right name. So the way Tosfos explains is this man has two names. He has one name in Yehuda. He's called by one name in one area, and another location is called by another name. And in the location where the get was written, they wrote the name that he uses in the different location. We're makbid, not that we write gittin, we're seifrim, the halach is you're supposed to write all the names. But let's say Shina Shma v'shma, Shemira v'shemira wrote the wrong city, the halach is teitz mizeh mizeh, v'kal drachim eleba. Again, ask the Gemara, v'may, name of my havel mevet. It is a real name of his. So the Gemara by little Kruya Gita, she should have made sure that the get is 100% valid. Omer Avina, Toshma, Konsu beget mikireyach, Tetze mizeh mizeh. The halach is as follows. We know, as we've been learning so many times, a kohen is not allowed to marry a grusha. So if a kohen divorces his wife, there's no going back. So what they used to write for kohanim, what was known was a ket mikusher. They used to write a line, leave a line blank and sew it up, and then continue. The purpose being that it took a long time to write such a get, so if the husband was angry, he has time to calm down. There are very specific halachas, which we're not going to learn today, regarding get mekusher. You have to have edim on the bottom of the get, but you also have to have edim in every fold. Let's say it's kireyach, it's bald, that means that you don't have an aid signed in every fold, the get is possible. And again, if she got married based on such a get, she had no right, she's an Eishes Ish. Ask the Gemara again, might have a little mevet. Says the Gemara, you buy a little Kriya Gutta. She should have read the get. So what we're saying here is, at this point of the Gemara, Rosh Hashanah says, my Havel El Mevet. So the Gemara wanted to say that in all these, we see that the Halacha doesn't say my Havel El Mevet. But we said that these aren't good proof, because these are unique situations where she did have an option. Says the Gemara, interesting story. Rav Papa Sav El Mevet Uvda, but my Havel El Mevet. Papa wanted to allow a woman to get married to go back to her husband based on the because she got married to the second husband based on the testimony of two witnesses and saying, what do you want from this lady? And as we're learning now, Rav Sheshet said in Amun Aleph, here we taka call her Inus. She did it with no wrong motives. Didn't we learn all these brises and mishnayos that we just finished quoting that we don't follow the concept of my havel el mevet? But then we explain that these are not situations of my havel el mevet. On every situation, we don't call her innocent. We explain why she's not that innocent. Akasha, sometimes the kasha is best for the teretz. Yes, we answered it, but it's not really a valid answer. From all these brises, we clearly see that the halacha doesn't always follow the concept of my havel el mevet. And even if she didn't have an option, we can't be makel, even if she didn't have an option. Says the Gemara, Amrav Ashi ulakala lachshinim. Let's say a woman got married in Besdin, and then there's a rumor that her husband is alive, but we didn't see him. We're not worried about it. High color, ilay makala basan nesuin. What kind of rumor are we talking about? If we're talking about a rumor that happened after they got married, Hama Rav Ashi Chada Zimna. Rav Ashi already told us this thing. Dom Rav Ashi, call the Boston Nesinan, Nesuan Lechashinan. In other words, the case was, let's say Kain married a woman. And then there's a rumor that she was a Grusha. Or Kain Gol married a woman and there's a rumor that she's an Almana. Since they're already married, we don't pay attention. Call the Boston Nesuan Lechashinan. So, why we worry, why would he even think we should worry about a rumor that the husband is alive? Answers the Gemara. Since we had to go through a Bezdin, we had to go through a Din Torah to decide if she's allowed to marry the second man. The Shirinon, and only then do we allow her to marry the second husband. So even if the rumor emanates after the marriage took place, it should be considered like a rumor that emanated before the marriage, and it should be reckoned with, and she should be usher, even though the first husband didn't show up. Kamash Milan, it only has the status of a rumor, and she can remain with the second husband. She only has to leave the second husband if the first husband actually comes.
Moshe Dunn took the car. Yeah, so call up Moshe Dunn to find out where it is. You're right. Okay? Okay, bye-bye.